this morning is a special event for all students of theosophy. It is White Lotus Day, a day that commemorates the physical passing of the great soul known to the world as Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. This morning, you will be presented with a brief outline of the life lived by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, after which there will be three short readings and a talk entitled HPB and Theosophy. It has been 125 years since her transition at the age of 59, 4 months before her 60th birthday. Her life sounds like a work of fiction. Born into an aristocratic Russian family, her father, a military man, and her mother, an accomplished author, her early life was filled with amazing incidents, such as the attempted baptism, where the priest's robe was accidentally set afire, or her fall from a horse that could have been fatal, but from which she escaped uninjured to the amazement of witnesses. She was the possessor of a wealth of talents, music, literature, painting, languages, and special powers that sometimes frightened those who weren't close to her. It might have been those talents that caused her to be teased that she would never get a husband. At 17, after an ill-advised marriage to a gentleman many years her senior, which gave her the name Blavatsky, she started her adventures without consummating the ill-fated marriage. The world at that time looked suspiciously on young women traveling alone, as they still do now in certain third world countries. Her travels at times were so dangerous, in fact, that many times during this period of her life, Madame Blavatsky disguised herself as a boy to avoid threatening and perilous situations. Her early travels took her to Turkey, Greece, Egypt. Of these, she wrote at Athens, in Egypt, on the Euphrates, everywhere I went, I sought my philosopher's stone. I have lived with the warring dervishes, with the Druzes of Mount Lebanon, with the Bedouin Arabs, and the marabouts of Damascus. I found it nowhere. Her continuing travels took her to France, England, the United States, Canada, Mexico, and Tibet. She had been on every type of conveyance available to the 19th century traveler, always fearlessly in search. Finally, in 1851, she met the object and catalyst of her search in London, a figure that had visited her in dreams since she was a child, whom she recognized instantly as her teacher and protector, and whom she always would address as her master. This figure, whom she addressed as her master, informed her that he required her cooperation in a work that he outlined for her, and to prepare herself for the task, she would need to spend 3 years in Tibet. She was 20 years old and about to embark on a journey that would consume the rest of her life. That same year, 1851, Madame Blavatsky embarked for Canada and the USA, Mexico, South America, and the West Indies. In 1852, she went by way of the Cape and Ceylon to India. initial attempt to enter Tibet ended in failure. She returned to England in 1853. In 1854, she once again went to America, crossing the Rockies with immigrants in covered wagons. Finally, in 1855, she was successful in entering Tibet, where she underwent training with her master. 3 years later, she left Tibet and traveled to France and Germany, and finally returned home to Russia, visiting her sister for a brief period in the fall of that year. She traveled and lived in the Caucasus from 1860 to 1865, where she faced severe physical and psychic challenges that in the end won her control over her growing occult powers. Once again, she left Russia and traveled extensively to the Balkans, Greece, Egypt, Syria, and Italy. 1868 found her again in India and Tibet. 1870, she was in Cyprus and Greece. She was shipwrecked on her way to Egypt. Rescued from drowning, she continued on to Cairo, where she tried to form a Société Spirite, which failed. Briefly, she returned to her relatives in Odessa, Russia, in July 1872. The following year, 1873, HPB was instructed by her master to go to Paris. Once there, she received further instructions which directed her to New York City, where she landed July 7th, 1873. At 42 years of age and in control of her powerful spiritual and occult powers, she was judged by the Mahatmas to be the best suited instrument for the work they had in mind. Namely, to offer to the world a new presentation, though only in brief outline, of the age-old Theosophia, the accumulated wisdom of the ages, tested and verified by generations of seers, that body of truth of which religions, great and small, are but as branches of the parent tree. Her task was to challenge, on the one hand, the entrenched beliefs and dogmas of Christian theology, and on the other, the equally dogmatic materialistic view of the science of her day. A crack, however, had recently appeared in the twofold set of mental fortifications. It was caused by spiritualism, then sweeping America. To quote Helena's own words, "I was sent to prove the phenomena and their reality, and to show the fallacy of the spiritualistic theory of spirits." In 1874, her master directed her to a man of noble character, Colonel Henry Steele Alcott, who was well known as a man who served his government with distinction during the Civil War, and who now was a practicing lawyer. He was to have an important role in the Theosophical movement. At about that same time, she also met William Quine Judge, a young Irish lawyer, who proved to be invaluable in the furthering of Theosophical ideas and ideals. No evaluation of her life can be complete without the inclusion of a vast contribution of writings, starting with her first great work, Isis Unveiled, which was published in 1877. And in 1888, she published perhaps her greatest work, The Secret Doctrine. In 1889, she published the Key to Theosophy. Numerous other books and articles were also written by her, for she was known to sometimes spend 12-hour days writing, breaking only for minimal nourishment. This scant outline of the facts presented this morning can be easily verified and added to with a little diligent research. Facts are important. They're like bricks. To become truly useful, you need some sort of mortar that will bind them together so that they have a meaning. What is the mortar of these facts? It's the impact of her existence on world thought. The breadth and depth of her impact are still being calculated and may never be fully known and appreciated. But there are some early returns, including Theosophy is the teaching of Madame Blavatsky. It is Hinduism at its best. Theosophy is the brotherhood of man. I recall having read Madame Blavatsky's Key to Theosophy. This book stimulated in me the desire to read books on Hinduism and disabused me of the notion fostered by missionaries that Hinduism was rife with superstition. Mahatma Gandhi. H.P.B. said in the Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, pages 519 and 20, the atom is divisible and must consist of particles or subatoms. It is on a doctrine of the elusive nature of matter and the infinite divisibility of the atom that the whole science of occultism is built. The science of her day denied the divisibility of the atom. Today, modern science considers it an unquestionable fact. The ninth Panchen Lama requested to have the voice of the silence reissued exactly as Madame Blavatsky had written it. Since her death, Adyar editions had incorporated what were meant to be amendments, but they did not meet with his approval. He would permit the corrections only of what were obviously printer errors. It was, he said, the only true exposition in English of the doctrine of the Mahayana and its noble idea of self-sacrifice for humanity. The ninth Panchen Lama. It was learned that a niece of Einstein's in India during the 1960s paid a special visit to the headquarters of the Theosophical Society at Adyar. She explained that she knew nothing of Theosophy or the society, but had to see the place because her uncle always had a copy of Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine on his desk, as quoted by Sylvia Cranston. Theosophy is a religious philosophy with a definite mystical concerns that can be traced to the ancient world, but is of catalytic significance in religious thought in the 19th and 20th centuries. The movement has been a catalytic force in the 20th century revival of Buddhism and Hinduism, and a pioneering agency in the promotion of greater Western acquaintance with Western thought. In the United States, it has influenced a whole series of religious movements. In the estimation of some scholars, no other single organization has done more to popularize Asian religions and philosophical ideas in the West. Encyclopedia Britannica. You dismiss H.P. Blavatsky rather too easily as hocus pocus. Nobody ever affected the thought of so many able men and women by hocus pocus. The real source of her influence is to be found in The Secret Doctrine, a book on the religions of the world, suggesting or disclosing an underlying unity between all great religions. George William Russell, writer, absolute abstract motion, representing unconditional consciousness. Even our Western thinkers have known that consciousness is inconceivable to us apart from change, and motion best symbolizes change. Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 14. Einstein's theory of relativity echoes this contribution, saying, motion must be regarded as the natural as well as the actual condition of matter. Kandinsky, Mondrian, Clay, Gauguin, all considered to be founding fathers of the modern art, share an express gratitude to HPB and the Theosophical movement. In Mondrian's last studio in New York City, of which he was notoriously exacting, the interior design was as severe as his paintings. The one piece that stood out and predominated the space was a large photographic portrait of H.P. Blavatsky. These are but a few of the documented acknowledgments of the influence of the life's work of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. Each of us sitting this morning can be added to that collection, because her presence has awakened the Arjuna in us. And like the lotus, we seek to rise above the mud of our physical earth and extend ourselves upwards with resolute, firm stalks through emotional waters to blossom in the pure intellectual air of understanding. We cannot yet actually reach the blazing sun of spirituality, but we can open ourselves to its warmth. We can absorb its energy. So on White Lotus Day, let us by all means remember and respect that great soul, H.P. Blavatsky, but let us also absorb the lesson of the White Lotus into our innermost beings. Let us strive, as she did, to unify the opposites, to become what all of us are destined to be, whole and holy.
From the Voice of the Silence. Of teachers there are many. The master soul is one, Alea, the universal soul. Live in that master as its ray in thee. Live in thy fellows as they live in it. Before thou standest on the threshold of the path, before thou crossest the foremost gate, thou hast to merge the two into the one and sacrifice the personal to self-impersonal and thus destroy the path between the two, Antaskarama. Thou hast to be prepared to answer Dharma, the stern law whose voice will ask thee at thy initial step, hast thou complied with all the rules, O thou of lofty hopes? Hast thou attuned thy heart and mind to the great mind and heart of all mankind? For as the sacred river's roaring voice, whereby all nature's sounds are echoed back, so must the heart of him who in the stream would enter thrill in response to every sigh and thought of all that lives and breathes. Remember that thou that fightest for man's liberation, each failure is success, and each sincere attempt wins its reward in time. The holy germs that sprout and grow unseen in the disciple's soul, their stalks wax strong at each new trial. They bend like reeds but never break, nor can they e'er be lost. But when the hour has struck, they blossom forth. seeds of wisdom cannot sprout and grow in airless space. To live and reap experience, the mind needs breadth and depth, and points to draw it towards the diamond soul. Seek not those points in Maya's realm, but soar beyond illusions. Search the eternal and the changeless Sat, mistrusting fancy's false suggestions. For mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. Seek, O beginner, to blend thy mind and soul. The Dharma of the eye is the embodiment of the external and the non-existing. The Dharma of the heart is the embodiment of Bodhi, the permanent and everlasting.
Reading from the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna speaks, "What, O Keshava, is the description of that wise and devoted man who was fixed in contemplation and confirmed in spiritual knowledge? Does he move and act like other men?" Krishna speaks, "A man is said to be confirmed in spiritual knowledge when he forsaketh every desire which entereth into his heart, and of himself is happy and content in the self through the self. His mind is undisturbed in adversity. He is happy and contented in prosperity, and he is a stranger to anxiety, fear, and anger. True wisdom of a spiritual kind is freedom from self-esteem, hypocrisy, and injury to others. It is patience, sincerity, respect for spiritual instructors, purity, firmness, self-restraint, dispassion for objects of sense, freedom from pride, and a meditation upon birth, death, decay, sickness, and error. It is an exemption from self-identifying attachment for children, wife, and household, and a constant, unwavering steadiness of heart upon the arrival of every event, whether favorable or unfavorable. It is a resolute continuance in the study of Adiatma, the superior spirit, and a meditation upon the end of acquirement of a knowledge of truth. This is called wisdom or spiritual knowledge. Fearlessness, sincerity, assiduity in devotion, generosity, self-restraint, piety, and almsgivings, study, mortification and rectitude, harmlessness, veracity, and freedom from anger, resignation, equanimity, and not speaking of the faults of others, universal compassion, modesty and mildness, patience, power, fortitude and purity, discretion, dignity, unrevengefulness, and freedom from conceit. These are the marks of him whose virtues are of a godlike character. What is night to those who are unenlightened is as day to his gaze. What seems as day is known to him as night, the night of ignorance. Such is the self-governed sage. This final reading is from The Light of Asia, the story of Bud, the Buddha, by Sir Edwin Arnold. Buddha is speaking. Pray not, the darkness will not brighten. Ask not from the silence, for it cannot speak. Vex not your mournful minds with pious pains. Ah, brothers, sisters, seek not from the helpless gods by gift and hymn, nor bribe with blood, nor feed with fruit and cakes. Within yourself, deliverance must be sought. Each man his prison makes. Who toiled a slave may come anew a prince, for gentle worthiness and merit won. Who ruled a king may wander the earth in rags, for things done and undone. Higher than Indra's, ye may lift your lot and sink it lower than the worm or gnat. The end of many myriads lives in this, the end of myriads that. Only while turns this wheel invisible, no pause, no peace, no staying place can be. Who mounts will fall. Who falls may mount those spokes that go round incessantly. If ye lay upon the wheel of change, no way whereof breaking from the chain, the heart of poundless being is a curse, the soul of things fell pain. No, ye are not bound. The soul of things is sweet. The heart of being is celestial rest. Stronger than woe is will. That which was good doth pass to better best. I, Bud, who wept with all my brother's tears, whose heart was broken by a whole world's woe, laugh, and I am glad, for there is liberty. Ho, ye who suffer, know you suffer from yourselves. None else compels, none other holds you, that ye live and die, and whirl upon the wheel, and hug and kiss its spokes of agony, its tears of tears, its nave of nothingness. Behold, I show you truth. Lower than hell, higher than heaven, outside the utmost stars, farther than Brahm doth dwell, before beginning and without end, as space eternally and as surely sure, is fixed a power divine, which moves to good. Only its laws endure.
else can be said? What can we possibly say to explain this woman? We see her physical existence. We've tracked it. We've made notes of it. We know that she walked this earth. We are amazed, just dumbfounded. I'm sure all of us are. But she said, that wasn't who I am. I'm something more than this, as you are. These forms are just vehicles so that we can manifest on this plane the unity of life. We see the unity of life in nature. It is everywhere. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. One kingdom sacrifices itself for the next until it comes to the human kingdom. Then sacrificing stops. But it doesn't. We are still children. We suffer from bumps and scrapes. We are parents. We suffer with children. And as we get older, we suffer with others around us. And now we live in this technical age, and we can't get away from it. The whole world is in turmoil. It is suffering. But underlying all that suffering is that spark of hope. It's the torch that HPB held high. This is the light. This is the truth. I can't give the truth to you. You must learn to think and consider for yourself what is true. You cannot rely on an outside God, anything outside of ourselves. Our answers lie within. In one of the readings, it was talking about the voice of the silence being the best expression of the Mahayana Buddhism school. No, not the best. HPB's life was the best expression of the Mahayana school. Three times she died. Three times. And for days, they were getting ready to burn her body. And she wakes up suddenly. Of course, everyone was amazed. Why? Where were you? What happened? So I don't know. But I saw my master, and he gave me a choice. Well, we can stop now, or you can go on with the work. And each time she chose, and she went on with the work. She continued with the suffering. In a body that was racked with pain, dengue fever, Bright's disease, Punjab fever, you know, things that would, frankly, destroy most of us. But she, as was said, continued to work 12 hours a day. No, sometimes 17 hours a day. One quote is she worked for 17 hours a day and ate oatmeal. That was what she did while she was at during this one session of writing the Secret Doctrine. But again, that's the physical HPV. What about this spiritual HPV? Well, we have heard of the Guru Parampara chain, which is a succession of knowledge passed down from one generation to the next, from one teacher to the next, so that these ideas are kept alive in the world. These are not HPB's ideas. There's a voluminous amount of writings that she did. She says, I bring but a cut nosegay of flowers, but nothing of my own, just this string to tie it. Well, she didn't even say that originally. It was Montaigne. And she quotes that, but nothing better epitomizes what she has done. She has done what Ammonium Saccus had done. Tried to unify all religions and point out that which is similar, that which is the same. And they all go back that man is a divine creature. No, a divine being. That we are divine in our true nature. But we won't find it outside of ourselves. Our divinity lies within. One needs to find that rock on which to stand, that is unmoving, that becomes the witness of our life. There we must stand. That is our true nature. HPB was that Mahayana Buddhist where she actually gained control of her lower nature. She exhibits it again and again and again. Well, as we come to learn, that's the first requisite. We cannot do anything beyond what we're doing now until we, through will and determination to serve humanity, not to gain powers, not to gain notoriety, but to help humanity. And how do we help humanity? How do we truly help humanity? Well, we think by changing the way they think. Let humanity understand what karma is, cause and effect, thought, word, and deed. And the result of that karma is reincarnation, because we come back again and again to perfect these forms so that the true light of spirit can shine forth. Right now, it is covered up in this vase or vase of clay. It can't penetrate the darkness. HBB said, yes, you can. It's how you think. The ideas that you hold to be true. You must re-examine one's life and then pay attention to being and becoming. There is your yoga. Your yoga is yourself. Pay attention to yourself. You become the master of your temple. And that's your feelings, your desires, your body. Why do you think we hear such stories of fakirs and holy men who were able to do these feats? And HPB too. She did every phenomenon to prove to the spiritualists that yes, these phenomena exist and that we can perform them. But they were more interested in wonder seeking. They were more interested in phenomena and the philosophy behind it, the mechanism that makes it work. Well, that could be from karma as well, because heaven knows where we would be if there are men of our age that were able to control their minds and their will, and not for the purpose, not for the aid of poor suffering humanity. That's why this knowledge has always been kept secret. Only for those who want it. not for those who seek after it to gain some kind of power and control. It's for those who have suffered and see the suffering in the world and looking for a way to ameliorate that suffering. Because we all cry inside. We all cry inside. Because in our next life we may find ourselves in dire straits. We may need a hand. We may need to be a part of that guru parampara chain. And that chain is how we connect to each other. The great vicissitudes of life are its mysteries. Death, life, where we come from, where are we going, why are we here? These are questions we all ask. And these are all the questions that HPB answered. But she answered them in such a way that, yeah, she gave us a way for us to resolve that issue within ourselves. But no one can tell you that this is the truth. It has to be self-realized, or nothing belongs to us. If we do not identify with it, we do not call it our own, we do not make it a part of our life. If we do not make it a living power, it dwindles and goes out. But there is always that germ, that seed that exists in everyone. That's why we are asked. That's why every one of our devotional books serve. Service to mankind. A very general term. One must find his own path. No one can tell you which path to walk. But we are shown the highest path. That's why in the first chapter of the Ocean of Theosophy, we are introduced to the Masters of Wisdom. Those beings who have kept alive this ancient philosophy, science, and religion. They have kept it alive. And we see all over the world remnants of that. In Egypt, especially in India, for that's from whence it came. But Egypt, among the Hebrews and Chaldeans, the Kabbalah, the Gnostic Christians, the Sufis of Islam, all of these carry the same kernel of truth, that we are all one. So, universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. That's the reality. But we don't like that reality because it is not self-serving. So we are shown that we need to expand our concept of the self. In the Gita, there's a small self and there's a large self. Well, we know what the small self is. We live in the small self every day. That's where we operate. So, where's the big self? Well, the big self is our altruism. Our larger self is our identity with all other creatures. Our larger self is the stripping away this personality. But that part of the personality which is separative and thinks it's separate, better than, different than. But there's that personality that loves each other. I don't care who you are. In those moments when you are with friends and family, and something just gushes up with inside of us. It's love. And that is our uniting force. We love one another. And if you do not resist it, you let it flourish. It is like that lotus. It will make its way out of that mud and darkness and into the light of day. And we will see it in our actions. But we are told again and again, HPB points it out, that everything begins in the mind. Once we change our ideas, change those things that we hold to be true, our life will change. You don't have to change your life. Change your ideas. Change your ideas. Consider the idea of unity. Consider reincarnation. Consider karma. Consider that we are eternal, boundless, and mutable, omnipresent beings who manifest periodically for the salvation of mankind. Well, that's how they describe an adept or a Muni. Well, that's us. It's the choice we make. It's the life we want to live. You know, we find ourselves following in the footsteps of our family, or the values that our family held. And of course we want it to be accepted by our mother and father. But now we've come to learn that, yes, but they only knew what they had been taught. And not everything that they were taught was the truth. But as fate would have it, we were shown that there's another mother and father in heaven, our higher nature. That part of us who identifies with all of life, if we but let ourselves do that. And act not for ourselves, but act for the other. You look at the volumes of work that HPB produced. It's mind-boggling. This is a lifetime of work for any individual, even more than a lifetime. But she did it in a matter of, 18 years, 16 years? And what is in the content of it is bewildering. Bewildering. But she said that some of this, she doesn't understand herself. This came from her master. Those who are the storehouse of this ancient wisdom. One of the biggest problems with theosophy is that the truth is before us. Can we bring ourselves to read it? That becomes the overwhelming problem. I'm afraid to know the truth because I am so set in my ways. How can I change? Well, fret not. Change your ideas again and again and again. People that used to come to where HPB was living, they used to, from 7 o'clock on, was tea time, and she would have discussions. And people again and again, when they left there, they said that they felt like they were in some elevated state of consciousness. There's even a few who have written that they had spent time with HPB, and after that short, brief period, they were doing things they couldn't do before, or they thought they couldn't do. They were inspired. They were inspired by her higher nature, which dwells in all of us. It's not unique. It just takes the application of our will and desire, because behind will stands desire. If we do not desire something strong enough, our will does not work. And we know how strong our will is. Look where we are. We willed ourselves here. All through life, we've willed this. And now we find ourselves in the company of like-minded human beings that have wandered and wandered, looking for answers, looking for truth, and not finding it anywhere. And finally coming into these doors, or reading Plato or Pythagoras or the Neoplatonists and saying, I wonder if anyone else thinks like this. And coming in, and there are a whole group of people that think like this. Struggling to think like this, because the world outside does not reward this kind of thinking. It says that we will seem as nothing in the eyes of those who have riches. We struggle to know the answers. We don't have them yet. We have some of them. We see the direction where they're headed. We see that our problems may lie with wanting to know them mentally. But then we realize that mentally is only one small aspect. It goes back to love. It goes back to Buddha. Compassion. Compassion for one another. That's our saving salvation. That's how we will save the world. By living in cooperation instead of disharmony. That's a universal truth. Universal truth. And that is why HPB, a Lycomonium Saccus, like the Neoplatonists, try to gather all the world's religions together and find a commonality for us to be human beings. And that commonality is found at the root of all religions. They all come from the same source, from this ancient teaching. The Chinese knew this ancient teaching. In Laos, this ancient teaching. It was found throughout the world, in South America, Egypt, India, Ethiopia, the Druids, the Kabbalistic Jews. This truth is everywhere. But those who have the truth are selfish. But that's the curse of the age. But that has been our curse for many, many, many generations. We have the truth, but it thinks it only belongs to us, to the Jews, to the Catholics, to the Islam, to the Hindus, to the Buddhists. We take back Buddhist, maybe Hindus too. But there too, it has evolved to darkness. The truth has been forgotten. The lost chord of Christianity, reincarnation. that religion will reawaken with the acceptance of that idea. We will reawaken when we have decided who we truly are and what we truly want to do. Do we want to start now? Wait. It's going to be a long time we're here. We're never going to die. We're never going to die. Maybe we'll die, but then we'll come back. And I'll do it next life. I'll do it next life. No, that's a conversation that goes on everybody's head. It does. Because we enjoy ourselves. We enjoy life. But we have defined that life because the ideas that we held. But now the ideas are changing. Yes, we still love life, but we love it differently. It's not the things that we have. It's the people that we love that broadens our consciousness. HBB loved all of us in such a way that we need to try to emulate. It wasn't a personal love. It was that love of a older teacher to a younger student. Here's the way. I'll point it out to you. Do as you wish. If you wish to go on suffering, but there is a reason for all this, and there is an end to all of this. We have to choose what kind of world we wish to live in. Not only the outside world, which will reflect this inner world of love and compassion and understanding. When we get angry, when we get upset, we say to ourselves, man, I'm still human. Well, good. I'm still human, so I have to work on that. I'll do better next time. Or I'll try. And that's it. We don't beat ourselves up. We don't demand exactitude. Evolution is from within outward. So what we do is an expression of an inward quality. Sometimes we say things that, am I a theosophist? I said that? Well, yes. Everything's not cleaned up. You're going to say stupid things. You're not perfect. You're not better than anybody else because you studied this philosophy. No. You just have no responsibility now because you know what the answers are. And you can't apply them to yourself. So don't stick your finger in someone else's eye. So here we are. We come together on Wednesdays and Sundays to keep this philosophy alive, to present it to the public, to present it to those who want it. They don't have to come here again. You know, we're not out proselytizing. But if you can read, you can do us anywhere. Because we are a theosophy. So we make every attempt to make it a living power in our life. Where we fall short, that gives us something to work on. And we'll be working for this life and probably many more to come. HPB gave us a gift. But as of any gift, if it is not appreciated, and we do not accept it with gratitude, it'll be in vain. We commemorate the life of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, a great being, a great soul, and we are forever grateful for the sacrifices that she made. Meeting adjourned.